Reggie. It's R&B Talks time.
It is. It's a little earlier today. I like it.
You know, there's actually sun coming through the window. It's a
sense of freedom.
It is March, so it feels a little better.
Springy. A little bit. Springy. Only thing that stinks is they're calling for a cold snap next week, which just is a bummer.
Have those though here, man. It'd be like in the middle of freaking May and all of a sudden it's snowing or something.
Dude, I was remember when it snowed on Derby. Like, it snowed hard on Derby.
Yeah.
Derby's May. I was like, yeah, it's craziness. So how was your week, Reggie?
Good, man.
Full of vim and vigor.
Yeah, it's work this week has been a little challenging. It's going to be challenging for a long time because of the just nature of this time period in the business world. But yeah. And then really this is the week I'm like, you know what? I forgot. I really need to pull together all my tax stuff because it's like, we got to do our taxes.
I'm very lucky. My wife handles all that. She handles the money thing, dude. I just don't have any interest. Like, it's not she handles it because I can't. She handles it because I don't want to. So taxes have already been paid. Our taxes are usually done by the first week of February.
Yeah. I mean, we usually don't owe anything. But I make it a point because I don't take out any more. It's like, I try to get everything to where I don't pay anything necessarily, but I'm not getting like a whole big chunk back. I don't want to give the government a loan during the year. So it's not really a big deal. We just have to get all the stupid tax docs together and you take it to our CPA guy and have him run through it.
Dude, maybe our government needs a loan. They suck.
They don't need a loan, dude. They need to quit printing money. Stop. Quit it.
What could they print instead?
IOUs, dude.
Sweet. I think they should print.
What it is anyway.
I think they should print bills and send them to all the countries that we've loaned money to and request it back. I like when they call it a loan, but it's not really a loan. It's just, here, we're going to give you a bunch of money and we're always going to say you owe it to us, but we're never really going to come and collect it.
I like the fact how they give the IRS agents so much power to just do stuff. Like, they don't even, that you don't go through the court system. You don't do it. I mean, like, if they just think you're doing, I mean, it's like money's locked up, period. Like, they just do, and there's no due process there.
Yes.
It's insane. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's like the worst mafia ever. Like, with the other presidents, they'd be like, you know, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. With Biden, it's like,
it's not just Biden.
You, he's going to go, I'm going to make you a donut. Look at squirrel. What happened to my toes? Like,
where's that old lady with that makes him chocolate chip cookies?
That's right. Like,
that was so good.
He's writing checks.
Chocolate chip cookies.
He's writing checks and signing somebody else's name.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
Bozo.
He's like, Oscar the Grouch. Like,
okay, so speaking of politics and in the presidency or whatever, I watched the Robert Kennedy Jr.'s, his State of the Union on that he released, right?
I didn't get to watch that. Was it good?
Yes. It was what you would want our president to say, because he wasn't talking. He didn't talk any. He, matter of fact, he said he was talking about the division of all the stuff and how it's like, it's, I mean, he really did. It was really cool. That, like, that's exactly the kind of attitude we need to run the country.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and it's, and the guys I play like on our Discord server that we play with all the time, they don't really like him too much because the way he talks, you know, because it is really like, It's raspy and everything else because it was, he had like throat cancer or whatever, right? But I'm like, dude, okay, I don't really care. Like, I don't care how he talks. Like, that's the attitude we need for the person who's got the most powerful office in the whole freaking world.
Well, and he also has that hardcore accent, which with the rasp and the hardcore accent, sometimes it makes him a little bit difficult to understand. But
yeah, but I mean,
I'll have to watch it tonight.
Yeah, now. Dude, it was really. I mean, it's not very long, and it was really American. That's the thing. That's really what I got. I got out of it.
Which we have needed that for a very long time.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not saying that Robert Kennedy Jr. is the way forward or whatever. I'm not promoting that because I don't really know for sure.
Honestly, if he made it to the ballot, I wouldn't be completely against voting for him.
No. But yeah. I just tell you that like we talked about on the last one, just the disappointment and the just disgust that we have for the current, the one that was given by our president was just appalling. So
it was awful.
So when as soon as I saw that pop up in my feed, I'm like, okay, well, I got to check this out. Cause I mean, I heard, you know, we already talked about Biden. So let me hear Kennedy Jr.'s version, you know, and it was really well done.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really cool.
But isn't it a shame though, that nowadays in the political arena, a guy like that is simply not going to be taken seriously because he's not a member of either party. He's running on the independent ticket.
I think that people need to get away from listening to the mainstream media on both sides about you must vote this way or that way because the other one's evil.
Well, it just goes back to people don't do their homework.
No.
Like they turn on their television, you know, brown, you know, red, you know, tan man bad, crazy, dementia ridden idiot good, and they just follow that line of thought. Like, it's, hey, we're gonna go right after that. It's a shame.
Yeah, no, it's. I don't know. I don't like any of it. So,
and there really is no. I mean, look, there's plenty of outlets where I would listen to what they have to say more. We went over some of those in an episode, but I don't believe that there's any untainted outlet. 100%. Right. Like I feel like if you're hearing the news from a national news, anything at this point, it's got a slant to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just nerve wracking, man.
Yeah.
So
the other thing I watched too was part of his interview with Howie Mandel. Howie had him on his show.
Yeah.
Robert Kennedy Jr. And man, Robert, he laid out everything about how the Ukrainian, the Russian stuff was exactly how it came to be.
Yeah.
And if people really want to know what's going on there, then listen to him. Cause he goes back to like the Putin and overthrowing Ukraine. Cause it was us. People don't understand that either. It was us who did that.
Mm-hmm.
It was us who dictated to the prime minister had Tony Blair do some stuff. We are running Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so if you listen to him talk, he gives details about this person did this. And it's like, well, there you go. I mean, that's exactly what, you know, people need to really pay more attention to than just all this other stuff. But you don't hear, you're not going to hear that. It's not going to be pushed out there because we already know that the media outlets and all that stuff are very much being controlled by what they can say or what they're reporting and all that kind of stuff. So
yes, they are.
Unless people take the initiative to go find the stuff, it's just not going to happen. Back to that point, people don't do that.
People don't care.
Yeah. I mean, astonishing. You know, I wonder though, through all this, what's it really going to take to get the majority of people to like actually care? You know, like we're already inflation and cost of goods and everything else and all this stuff and lack of growth here.
Here's where I think the problem lies for the Joe Biden presidency. There are no more smoke and mirrors.
No.
They tried to bring back the Russia collusion hoax and it got swatted down quickly. It's not been mentioned since. They tried the orange man bad thing. Nobody's listening. I'm going to tell you something. And I was watching a little bit of history of the Ukraine war since it began to now. And if I didn't know any better, okay. All right. So Putin's trying to take over the Ukraine. Not really doing a good job. Okay. Putin said this war would be over in 3 months. They've been at war for 2.5 years. He cannot take the Ukraine.
Because of us.
Yeah. Zelensky. Really, well, here's the theory. Zelensky continues to come forward and ask for money. So the UN has sent troops, which the reason they sent troops is Zelensky is no longer able to drain the United States for money anymore because the Republicans have said we're not going to pass this bill. He's now gone to other countries to ask for money. They're not giving him money. So the UN is sending in troops. I've read that they're sending in troops. Okay, well, here's the thing. Putin hasn't won the war. Zelensky hasn't really won the war. We have sent billions upon billions upon billions of dollars to the Ukraine. And this is just a theory of mine, and it just popped into my head. I'm starting to think that maybe this war not ending on their end is on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would dare say that this is a way for Zelensky to get money to pay off his oligarchs. And I would dare say that I think some of that money is going to Putin to help rebuild his army. And this whole thing has been basically a front to launder money.
Well,
out of other countries.
That's totally possible. I mean, it's
because think about it. Look, all right. So Russia's military is old. They're using old military. They don't have really anything up to date, right? They're not neither is the Ukraine. We have sent them state of the art weapons, the Ukraine. They still haven't won this war. There's not many reasons why this could be continuing to go on.
Yeah.
Outside of it's profitable for both parties. And I'm starting to think that may very well be the issue at this point. Is Zelensky has become a rich man off of this. So have his oligarchs. And Putin needed money to build his army because he has bigger and grander plans than the Ukraine. So how would you pull money from other countries when you're a communist dictator? Well, in this day and age of propaganda, it's not that far-fetched, right? Just kind of.
No, I mean, I don't disagree or even say that's not possible. I mean, there's so many things that the way this has gone on and the money we've sent, our involvement in it, what Putin's done, what the UN's done.
Yeah, not to mention the money that Britain sent.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, there's, look, this is such a circus. And it's and this is the thing. I don't think any of the people that are making this stuff happen are stupid.
I don't think they are either.
You know what I mean? I mean, if you think about it, if you alleviate that they're making monumental financial mistakes and they're doing this purposefully, then there's a plan involved and there's a real cause and effect that's orchestrated. So, I mean, sure. Right. I mean,
and I hate that because that taints the whole view of it for me. Like,
but that's the same thing though, that's happening on all these conflicts, dude. I mean, that's what's going on. It's like there are world powers that are making decisions across and for their own self, self-growth, self-enablement, all that stuff. It's for these larger multinational global organizations and people that run them.
And I think everybody needs to quit thinking. I think everybody needs to quit thinking that Putin is a crazy man.
But see, I don't see anybody that is worth listening to saying that.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Here's the reason why I say that. Oh, he's going to start a nuclear war. No, he's not. And here's why.
No.
He's not. He wants power. Ending it all and basically sending the world into an apocalypse doesn't give him power.
No.
It doesn't give him what he wants. Mm-mm. Right? So he is continually playing this game of mental chess, which, by the way, if you listen to the Carlson interview with Putin, he's pretty darn good at it.
Yeah.
So
he'll smack you down.
But anyway, enough about the
Putin.
I mean, butthole. Sorry, I hate Putin. I hate the whole thing.
Man. I know. Well, I mean, this is why I don't. It. I guess for me, it's so clear that there's all these plans within plans, and it's all way up here, and that really our government, they're not in control of anything.
No, not at all.
Not that we're at being. All. you know, we're being divided and all these things, the distracted, all this stuff. It's clear to me that all this stuff is on purpose and it's planned and everything else. I mean, you know, the whole, it's like, well, what can we do? What can we do this week to draw the public's attention over here so that we can do this over here?
Yeah.
What kind of crisis can we conjure up to put money here rather than over here? I mean, it's always something. It's a tit for tat type of nonsense all the time.
It's this big game of back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, it's just powerful people that are greedy and mongering. Hateful people. I mean, like, I don't, you know, and I mean, this is, you know, I think the key here though, is that they have made some mistakes. COVID was a mistake. And I say that because that really changed a lot of people from being on the fence to being like, no.
Yeah.
So there's a very, very hefty majority that it won't take much more for you see a real uprising, and not physical one, but I'm saying, like, you know, it's like the enough is enough. You either, you know, it's we're getting close to that point, man.
Well, I think that COVID wasn't just a mistake. I feel like it was a disastrous mistake. Like it was cataclysmic the way it was handled. Like it changed perspectives for people forever.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't a, you know, a bump in the road kind of thing. This was a dynamic changing event.
Yeah.
And in order for, and I don't think either side is going to recover from COVID. Like I think I think it's implanted a level of distrust amongst the people that is almost insurmountable. Right. So lies, I tell you, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk a little bit about family, but before we really get into that, I didn't watch all of it. I didn't have time, but I caught a little bit of the Jordan Peterson and Dr. Phil interview.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really, and what I found really, my view of Dr. Phil is I really didn't think very highly of the man, you know, for a long time. What he used to say, and you, I'd be like, what are you talking about, dude? But when I saw this come up, I was really curious, right? Because it's like, usually Peterson doesn't interview people to debate with, really.
Yeah.
He has a conversation. So I was really curious. And I don't know, maybe he's changed his ideas or like something or other.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I did watch the recent episode of Rogan that he was on.
Okay.
And I was shocked by what I heard. Like, that was not what I was expecting from Dr. Phil. Like, he talked about how COVID was he talked about COVID being a huge mistake, the government making terrible mistakes, and he talked about all those things. So, yeah.
So, what caught me was, like, this is all in preparation. I think he's got a book, We've Got Issues, Dr. Mm-hmm. Phil does, coming out. And it's all about the attack on faith, family, and science.
Yeah.
So what I was curious about is like, okay, so what does he mean by all these things? And like I said, I didn't get through all of it, but there's a couple of things that I think are really important. He noted that people are unwilling to speak out three times less than what we used to in like the 50s.
Say that again.
People nowadays are three times less likely to speak out, unwilling to speak out.
Three times more unwilling to speak out.
Yeah. Then so we're three times less speaking out as a per people about issues and stuff. And he was relating all that to about like how technology can be a good thing or whatever, but because we're, as a culture, we're fearful of being intimidated by canceled or ostracized or whatever, right? And so we don't speak out near as much as we used to because of this whole fear of being like, you know, the cancel culture type of thing. I thought that was interesting, but also too was like the identity was like a big portion of the first part of this interview, because they were talking about the what do you call it? The personal truth. Someone's personal truth. Personal truth being like you're by yourself. You take your societal mask off, and it's like how you're honest with yourself. That personal truth, and how we measure that with somebody's societal truth. Because we get slammed in the face with societal truth all the time. We rarely see the real personas of people. We don't see the personal truth. A societal truth perpetuated online by all this nonsense.
Very true.
And he was there. So there was a big portion about how, and Jordan Peterson like classified like the whole idea of like the Ten Commandments as being like a unified manifestation of the authority of reality.
Great rules of living, right?
You know, but it goes beyond just rules. It's like it really all leads to like this manifestation of a mindset that is what the Ten Commandments encompass. He referred to one of the arguments that the Pharisees had with Jesus in the Gospels. Okay, I don't remember which one it was now, but anyway, getting back to that, you know, like your personal truth is how you really, when you're unmasked and you're honest with yourself, how you're relating to that unified manifestation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really really impactful what they were talking about, and what I thought was also really cool was like Dr. Phil said. And this is one of the things he goes, it's not irrational to know we don't know everything, because they were talking about faith.
Yeah.
Like we have to have faith because like we don't know everything. We're not going to ever know everything. It's not going to happen.
We don't see gravity. We just know it works.
Yeah. He was like, there's, you know, we may just not have instrumentation for some things. Like he mentioned his example was like the molecule. Like we knew it was there, but we didn't have the instrumentation or technological advancements in order to see the molecule, but we did later on. And it, you know, it was like that. We had to have faith that it existed before we could actually observe that existence.
You have to have faith in order to be pursuant of the manifestation of something.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And then in the same token, what he said, he did say, look, he clearly said he was a Christian. And he actually said, you know, he's a pray to God, but row for the shore type of Christian. And I thought that was a really good, like, example of how, cause in Christianity you get these people that, you know, and you know what I'm talking about. Like they won't go to the doctor, or they won't, like, certain things they just won't do because they're just saying by faith he's going to take care of this or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they don't make any effort to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Which is a foolish thing to do, because you're part of this story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're an instrument of his will, not that you're just some pawn that gets moved.
Well, here's the thing, and I say it like this. Okay, so God is the mechanic, and you're the tool. The tool has to be useful, right? The tool doesn't lay on the ground and just fix things. He has a plan. You're the tool of delivery in that plan.
Yep.
You have to be a working tool, right? You can't be the set of Allen wrenches you got in the press board entertainment center that sits in the drawer in the kitchen, right? You have to be an actual useful tool. You have to be working towards something. I think that's brilliant. He's a, you know, pray to God, but row for the shore Christian. I love that. That's awesome.
I know. It was such a succinct, like, well, that makes total sense, you know?
Yeah.
And then he also, one of the other things he said was, you know, you got to treat yourself with dignity and respect. You can't give away what you don't have.
Yeah.
Cause part, he lays out all these principles in his new book, and I didn't get a chance to see like all the principles, but one of them was like, you know, you treat yourself with dignity and respect so that you can treat others with dignity and respect.
Yes.
Cause you're not going to be able to do that, the latter without the former.
Yeah.
And then he also said, be who you are on purpose, live with intention and own it. So it's like, you know, it's one of those things. Put on your boots, get out there and do it.
Yep.
Own it. You know, you make a mistake, you own it, and you keep rolling on. And it was just really cool to hear, I guess, like these two guys who one of them stated he was a Christian. Jordan, I think, is on his way to be there if he's not already. But it was a really cool conversation about identity and faith and stuff. It was just really neat, and I'm going to watch the rest of it. But yeah, it reflected a lot of what we've talked about here with being a man, having purpose, being intentional. Your identity is not ground into like just what you do as an occupation. It goes farther beyond that, and it's of the utmost importance. Your identity is critical for you.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really cool. And it does lead up to like talking about how what really family is, and like how the structures and roles and all these kind of things that family is. So, but we can probably listen to our sponsor and their experience with mom.
Here, I like it.
Before we get into family.
Sponsor, take it away.
Picture this, Brian. You're out with the fellas and you get a call from mom. What's that, mom? Your printer's acting up again? I'll be right there.
Reggie, we all love mom, but wouldn't it be great if just this once we could send someone in your place?
Sure would.
At Edwards Managed Technology Computer Consulting, rest assured that they'll take care of mom, dad, brother, sister, and even that one aunt with all the cats.
Don't feel bad sending your loved ones to voicemail. Just make sure you text them about Edwards Managed Consulting. They fix computers, printers, and so much more.
Visit www.emtcc.net to make an appointment, or give us a call at 1-888-551-2770. Mention R&B Talks for your 10% off your appointment. Remote and on-site options available.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Edwards.
All right, and we're back. Reggie, I found out some pretty interesting things this week in researching for this.
That Dylan Mulvaney made a music video?
I'm not going to ever watch nor listen to that. I heard, but I will never.
Look.
I will never give that.
No.
That is time that is that what 2.5 minutes, whatever it is, 3 minutes. I would rather shave my legs with a cheese grater, honestly, than listen to that. Like, it's
all I saw. I was flipping through Instagram, and it was the Officer Tatum, and it was like just the very first like little blip, and I have quickly scrolled. I'm like, nope.
Nope. I don't care how good your song is.
No.
You lose.
No.
No.
It was just funny.
I was looking at definitions of family because you and I had spoke about something or texted back and forth about something earlier in the week. And I've really got me thinking, digging deep into this thing of what is family, right? I've had a very tumultuous family history, but there's three definitions that I pulled up and I thought they were very interesting. I'll give you all three of them. The first one was from Merriam-Webster, which is the basic unit in society traditionally consisting of two parents rearing their child. Also, any of the various social units differing but regarded as equivalent to the traditional family, a single parent family, one spouse and child.
Right? Yeah. So let's just pause for 1 second. Say statistically, that the nuclear family is the most efficient, successful family unit structure there is.
Absolutely.
So I just want to lay that out there. There is no argument. That is a statistical fact.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anybody saying otherwise. Yeah. That's it.
That's it. So the next one, I went to the Urban Dictionary, urbandictionary.com. And it was a group of people, usually of the same blood, but don't have to be, who genuinely love, trust, care about, and look out for each other. Which I thought was a decent definition, right?
Okay.
You know, if you're looking for something just kind of base. But then I went on to the biblical definition of family. Mm-hmm. The Bible defines family as, do we, those of the same household, that being a pairing of a husband, a man, and a wife, a woman, along with their children. That's the biblical definition. Man, wife, children. That's the nuclear family, right? Okay. So, but then that takes me back to the word community, right? Like family and community, I feel like a lot of times are the same thing. So I went to Webster's and looked up community, and it was a group linked by common policy. It's kind of sterile. An interacting population of various kinds of individuals, such as a species in a common location, a state, or a commonwealth.
Okay.
Then I went to the biblical definition of community in Hebrews 10, 24, and 25. The Greek word relating to fellowship is koinonia, a collection, joint participation, or more simply, a community. The word implies intimacy and cooperation amongst all believers and a love that can only be found by knowing the overpowering love of Jesus Christ. That's the biblical definition of community. So I guess my question in all this, and this was born of our conversation, is
okay.
My definition of family is a lot different in the sense of I've got some friends. You are one of them, Reggie. I consider you family. If something were to happen, I'm going to be there for Reggie, right?
Right.
So is family always blood?
No.
Or is family...
Okay. And let's take this. I'll bring it back to an intellectual biblical level.
Okay.
The ancient world, it was not always blood related. I mean, cause you have, I think this is the, what am I reading here? The Nelson's New Illustrated Bible Dictionary, right? The extended family could include any of all the following relationships: the man and his wife or wives, his concubines or female slaves, his sons and unmarried daughters, the wives of the sons, grandchildren, aged parents, and grandparents. So like, there's not all blood there, right? No. So we have to look back biblically and say how much family did change. I mean, like it was established in Genesis from the very first creation about man, woman, be fruitful, multiply.
Dig it.
But then you got the sinful nature of man perpetuates through the Old Testament. And then you have all these multiple wives and you have concubines and all this stuff. And it's like, God doesn't ever say, yeah, that's okay. He just says, this is how you need to treat them. Yeah. But it's still the definition of marriage and like of a family goes back to Genesis.
Yeah.
And then we screwed it up. And so, you know, it's like, it's trying to like just, you know, paint a flower on a pig kind of thing.
Yeah. Lipstick on a pig.
Yeah. Right? I mean, so, and, you know, when Jacob's family moved to Egypt from the promised land, he was accompanied by at least 66 people. That's in Genesis 46, 26, by the way. So, I mean, that's not all blood. That's a huge, you know, that's a large family. And you take that through history a little bit. And really our modern idea of families, it's screwed up. It is not correct.
How so?
Because we tend to like, we don't have like multi-generational households anymore. We don't have like,
that's true.
You know, people, our families aren't living necessarily close to each other anymore, necessarily. Like we're all just going where our careers take us and everything else. Mm-hmm. And we're not really as concerned about living with our families.
Yeah.
And that's a big mistake. I mean, if it was up to me, I would already have my whole entire family and extended family living in like a large complex. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I would, because that's just how I see it as being, but you know,
well, let me put this out there for you, Reggie. And I came from a family of a lot of divorce, drug abuse, alcoholism, very traumatic at times, you know. I cannot in my wildest dreams or wildest imagines see myself having a lot of those people around me ever. So I've had to kind of build family, right? Like, all right, so, you know, my wife's family is great. My family is a, you know,
okay,
cluster of blarkey.
You're not gonna like it.
Okay, say it, dude. Dude, when have you ever not told me something I didn't want to hear? Let's roll.
The men in your family did not step up to that and stop what needed to be stopped.
Absolutely.
Okay. And if you were, if let's say you were in a group, your family unit was in a tight group, and you grew up with not just your, you know, there's more than just your very close family. It's like got uncles and aunts and stuff in there, right? If there's there's likely going to be a man to step up if something of that stuff's going on and put a stop to it.
Yeah.
Right? If you're living in a close community like that with your family, that's how it should work.
Well, I think one of the problems with my family, and this is something that we kind of found out later, kind of going back through history, is there was this generational traumatic thing going on, and every iteration of that generation was a little more broken than the generation before it. Right.
Understood. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm fully aware. My dad even said, you know, cause my dad was gone. We didn't have much of a relationship for a long time. So once we got back together, he openly admitted, he said, I should have came and found you and I should have fixed it.
Yes.
So he owned it. Like, he didn't try to get away from it. He didn't make any excuses either. Right. Like that I very much appreciated that. It wasn't, I didn't, and here's the 68 reasons why I couldn't, right? It was, I didn't, and that's just what it is, right?
So, yeah.
But yeah. I feel like for me, whereas with you, you've got brothers, family that you're tight with, all of those tight-knit relationships that I have come from my wife's side of the family. Now, I have brothers, but they're kind of scattered to the wind. And we don't really spend a lot of time together, so I don't really know them that well. I don't know much of anything about them other than what they do for a living for the most part, or don't do for a living for that matter. But I think part of this for me was there are a lot of people out there like me that had to go figure out their own definition of family. And I feel
that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. But, you know, that's what really struck me is, you know, because I know a lot of people out there that are loners, man, that had bad family issues, were scorned or had to get away from that, and they don't know how to rebuild that family.
Well, and so that does bring back the whole where's your center?
Yeah.
How are you defining this stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, like, where are you at? Because, I mean, a lot of when you go through trauma that is by the family, which we've all have,
yeah,
that cuts deep,
yeah,
you know, and like you have to heal from that,
yeah,
one way or another, you have to deal with that. And I know even in my own, right, we have cases where people have not done that, and it's still causing problems today,
yeah.
So there like you got to, in order to really get to that point where you're building your family, like let's say. In your case or whatever, you know, you move to a new, or us, we moved to a whole different country. Sure, your blood family's still back, like would be back here, but like now I'm in this whole other place. Now I'm looking for, I would be looking for connections. I would be looking for
community,
some other community and all that stuff. Yeah. And that community could be brought in as, and would be considered family if it got to that. You know, if you got to that point. So, I mean, but in order to do that, if I left the traumatic situation, I need to heal that traumatic situation before I'm able to give something else out. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I've told several people who've had family issues, I'm like, well, look, man, if that's still causing you angst and it's still bringing you pain, you need to fix that.
Yeah.
You got to deal with it. Yeah. Because you're not going to be able to find other like quality relationships that are at the family level if you're not dealing with your own stuff.
Yes.
Right? Because you're going to be blinded by that trauma.
Yes.
Right?
Well, for me, I had to forgive and let go, right? That was my thing.
Exactly.
Like I knew that there, I was not, it didn't matter how much I dug, how much I went in, you know, and oh, tell me why. I was never going to get an answer that was going to be satisfactory, right?
Right.
So what I decided was going to be best for me was to forgive and let go. So what I did was I said, okay, I forgive all of you that wronged me, but I'm going to let you go. Like, you're going to go be you and I'm going to go be me. And you no longer get to rent space in my head for free, right? Like, I'm not going to give that to you. And once I, and the forgiveness wasn't for them. It was
never
for me.
Is. Never is.
It was for me. It was for me to be able to say, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Right.
So you got
to
go.
So that's what I encourage people to do is, and this is the thing. I don't care what level of trauma it is, right? Like whether it was sexual abuse or physical abuse or emotional abuse or mental abuse, whatever it was, you're never going to be able to go back. It doesn't, they could sit down in front of you and tell you every reason why they did it, but it doesn't change the fact that they did it.
Correct.
Right? So what I've told people that I've talked to is, you know, you got to forgive. And they're like, well, I could never forgive them. I'm like, it's not for them. It's for you. And then you got to let them go. You ain't going to turn a tiger into a zebra. You're just not going to do it. They both might have stripes, but you're never going to make a tiger into a zebra, right? So you got to let them go be a tiger and you need to go be a zebra, right? You need to go pursue the spiritual things that are going to make you whole, right? You need to go seek, you know, God and understand that that's what's going to bring you to center. Whereas if you keep trying to change a zebra into a tiger, all you're really doing is continuing to dig that trauma deeper and continuing to build disappointment into your existence.
Yeah.
So
you're letting that stuff have power over you.
Yeah.
And longer than the actual event was, it's a lasting control over you.
Yeah.
You have to stop that. You have to break that cycle of that trauma, that pain, that was then. We're now.
Yeah.
Let's move forward. That's back there, yeah. Forward. And that's not, and look, it's not always easy. I want to make that, I don't make that, but that's what I'm saying. Like when I envision a family structure, it's like, then why that's close together? Because, you know, everybody's going to make mistakes, do stupid stuff. Everybody's going to screw up their kids one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I think right now is what I see a lot of like grandparents that either have too much to do with grandkids or not near enough either. And sometimes you have grandparents that are like raising their grandkids because of whatever situation with their, you see this a lot, or in some cases you have grandparents who just are so back away from any kind of like parenting role that they don't really help anything either.
Yeah.
You know, cause in my view, it doesn't really matter if you're a grandparent, great grandparent, you're whatever, you're still, that's still there. The parent is still part of that.
Yeah.
And you still need to be that, you know, yeah. in some cases, right?
Well, but there's a reason why people don't start families when they're in their 60s, right? You know, because mm-hmm. children are, and you know this as well as I do, we both have kids, differing ages. Parenting is a young person's game for a good portion of it, right? Like you have to have a little bit of vigor and strength mentally, physically, emotionally in order to rear a child properly.
Right.
Right. And when you put a child, a small child in a home with people who are past their prime age, and I'm not an ageist, just saying, past their prime age, there are things that child is not going to get.
Yes.
I didn't get them. I was raised mostly by my grandparents because my mom was incapable and my grandfather had already raised his kids. And so had my grandmother. So they had taken me on, you know, admirably because they felt they needed to, but there were certain aspects of life that I didn't get from them. I didn't get, you know, energetic people that wanted to go be at all of my sports events and wanted to push me. And they were very much, let's just keep him safe and fed and hope everything else works out.
Yeah.
So that's kind of tough too. Cause I mean, you don't want to ever discourage someone from taking care of a child, but at the same time, is it the best situation? Right.
I think this is where we get back to like the real reality of God's idea of family and roles, that like at any point you can break a generational cycle of nonsense.
Yeah, for sure.
And this, we've seen this in the church many times where somebody, their whole family's just a freaking wreck.
Yeah.
And then, but they have decided to walk the path.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden their kids now and their kids, they have just broken a cycle that will not be there anymore.
Exactly.
Right.
Amen, brother.
And that is where I see the power of like how God's ideal of family and stuff just really is so magnified in those instances. And when you see that kind of thing, it's like a realization of just how, just the reality of like his way is that's the penultimate.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That works. Like there is no denying the difference in how that manages people's lives. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So you are breaking that cycle, Brian.
Yeah.
And I think if it's important for you to look at like your sons will not have the same thing that you.
No,
no. That's you have just done something completely different for not only your son, but their sons, their sons, their sons. That's what you got to look at, dude.
Yeah.
And you've been through all that stuff, but that's made you who you are today.
Yeah. It's made me stronger, my will harder.
Right.
I've been, but I mean, another thing too is, you know, I had somebody the other day, because you've heard me, you know, I call everybody brother, most men. And the guy goes, why do you call me brother? Do you not remember my name? And I'm like, no, brother, here's the truth of it. We are children of God.
Yep.
We are adopted into the family of Christ. We are brothers and sisters to Jesus Christ. And because we have been handed that royal blood, you are my brother. She is my sister. Because we are in that family together.
Yeah.
Right. I consider that if somebody calls me their brother, I consider that an honorable thing to call me. Right. I remember your name, but if I call you brother, it's because I truly believe that we all have an ultimate end to who we are. And that is to be with God, right? To go to heaven and be there. So when I say brother, I'm not saying brother because I'm trying to be dismissive. I'm saying brother because if you're where I'm at and we're going there together, you really are my brother.
I mean, and that's the thing. That's what makes a biblical worldview with family so much different is that we're looking at it from this idea that we're rooted in a heavenly family.
Mm-hmm.
that Jesus allowed to bring, he brought that kingdom of heaven down to earth. And now we get to experience that, mm-hmm. live out that and try to emulate that as much as we can here with our own families.
Yeah.
And what happens when you do that? Is you create generational change.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing looking at the church too. And this is something I've always struggled with the church is, you know, and listen, man, I don't ever say that prayer is not good for people. I'm not saying that. I've had that brought to my attention. But what I'm saying is if you're in a situation where you only have a strike of a few minutes to be with somebody and you want to pray for them, then by God, pray. Dude, pray, because he's listening, right? But I think the church would be so much more effective if they treated people with a familial respect, right? I need to get to know you a little bit, right? I see it in small churches. You know, do you know my name? Do you know my name? Do you know where I live? Do you know how long I've been coming to this church? There's only 50 members, dude. Like, do you know enough about me to look at me and say, I've made an effort to now cross that line into, hey man, where are you at spiritually? But when you're in a church and someone new walks in, you have to be careful. And the reason is, you know, my wife said this the other day, and I got to make sure I remember this properly. There are There are searchers. There are people who are looking for application. People who are looking for application have been in the church a little longer, right? They've got that. They've tasted the spirituality. They're looking for ways to apply that in their life. But when the searcher walks in, the searcher doesn't know what they're walking into. They're just searching. So if you roll up on them and you're like, "Jesus is the king," but ask their name, where they're from, and what they do for a living first. Find out a little bit about them so that you can relate to them. And this came up in a conversation. I have a brother, Kentucky Revival Hub Ministries. Trip is a good guy, known Trip for a long time. And Trip is a minister, and Trip is a good minister. He's really found Christ. But you know, somebody asked me the other day, "So what do you know about Trip?" And I said, I went to say something, and other than the fact that he's a minister, I don't really know anything about Trip as far as his favorite color, what's his favorite food, you know. And this is a brother of mine, right? So you just got to be a little more careful, because if it's like, you know, if a guy shows up on your doorstep and knocks on your door and is hungry, you may feed him. You may not bring him in the house and sit him down at the table with your family because you don't know who that guy is. But if he's hungry, you may feed him, right?
Yeah.
But eventually, if you do the right work, he may make it to the table. But you got to do the work first.
Well, this goes back. Okay, so there's a couple things I got to unpack here.
All right, unpack it for me. All right, so Reggie, this is my favorite part when Reggie unpacks.
I've said this many times, is that the westernized church is getting the church family wrong. And part of that is exactly what you just said, is that they're not living life together.
Yeah.
Okay. How would you really come up to another brother they're doing something completely wrong? Well, how are you really going to make an impact if you're not really doing it? You know, you talk to him at coffee time, you know, you don't do anything. How are you going to really impact that person if you just say, "Hey, you know, man, you really got to knock off this whatever behavior. It's really not biblical," or whatever. How's he going to interpret that if you're not really living life with this brother?
Yeah.
In Christ, sure. He's supposed to be your brother in Christ. So my whole thing with like the westernized church is like, people are too busy. They're not building life, living relationships with other people in that particular church body. They're not meeting, you know, if you're just going around, you don't know what Susie's kids, you know, really just, they got two kids, something or other. I don't know. That's not cool. Like, I mean, you're not living life with anything. You're not going to help each other. You're not going to be iron sharpens iron at that point.
Yeah.
You can't do that if at that level of relationship. It goes to a family. The church has to, should be a family unit.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you have somebody new come in, I wouldn't say the focus is anything on like where they at in the gospel message. Like, what do they understand? Are they going to be able to like, can they come to Christ today kind of stuff? No, it's about like, you really need to get to know this person, and you can't just do that by just coming up and trumping them on the head with Jesus is the King.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to say anything wrong, but like, why? It's like what any real evangelist will tell you, that it's rare when you can just walk up to a complete stranger and be like, "Hey, there's this guy named Jesus. He's cool. He does this. He's going to save you. All you got to do is say this thing."
Which, hey, I'm not going to say it's never worked,
but
I'm not going to say it's worked a lot.
No, but like for listen, if I think about it, for like guys like me, that would never work with me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, when I was,
I'd shut you down instantly.
Oh, dude, I'd be like, "You're an idiot. Are you kidding me? You just told me all this crap, but what? Why?" You know, and that's you gotta understand. We're a people in our society that have access to the most information ever at our fingertips.
Yep,
and we're bombarded by a worldly message of happiness and self-indulgence. That you got to break through those things in order to really make a lasting change. Because anybody can say, "Well, that sounds pretty good, cool. But what about the transformation? What about the stone heart into flesh? What about, you know, really making that choice to understand the gospel is more than a salvation message, right? That's you got to work towards discipleship instead of just towards salvation. I guess that's where I'm going.
Well, and I think that's part of the whole, I think that's part of what's wrong with the Western church in a sense is they've fallen into the trap of this instant gratification thing. Well, this person's going to come to church and I'm going to tell them about Jesus and they're going to find Christ. Not likely. I mean, I'm sorry, but not likely. And let me be clear. I'm not trying to beat up the church. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to figure out is where along the way did of all things, listen to every biblical story that is written. It is the story of Abraham. It is a long and enduring story where there was much work that was done by Abraham and much work that was done by the tribe and all these things. And somehow now we seem to think, and I hear this all the time too, and this really runs me ragged, is I hear at the end of a sermon, go look at our Facebook page and our Instagram. And then I go look at their Facebook page and Instagram, and it's nothing but memes and I guess what they call funny videos and a bunch of, I didn't find Christ through Instagram or Facebook. I found Christ through a person who cared enough to tell me about him after he spent the time to get to know me. And then once I trusted him and he knew he could trust me, then he shared that message with me. And it meant something at that point.
But see, encounter church.
Yeah.
Will forever have my eternal gratitude for how they got to know me.
Yeah.
The effort they made to know me.
Yeah.
And at that time, I mean, it was remarkable that they took, I mean, that's how it worked. I wouldn't have listened to a single word of them really doing whatever they're doing unless they took the time, have coffee with me,
put in the effort,
do all that stuff. Right. Yeah. It just, I mean, and look, it wasn't wasted. I mean, look, they created a monster, man. Cause I mean, ever since then, I've been a freaking rampaging, you know, crossback, you know, Bible beating Jesus freak.
Yes, very much so.
but I guess where I'm going is like the church. Like, let me kind of wrap this all up, in together. Like, so God creates this earthly foundation of a family in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
That gets expanded into like community and how that can also be part of your family. It doesn't have to all be blood. It can be, you know, close relationships that are brought in and you treat them as your family. And then it goes beyond that when he's like, you are all adopted sons and daughters of the Most High. So now you have the entirety of believing gospel-centered people are all family.
Yeah.
So I think I think this is the point that the church, you see that message, but it doesn't get practiced.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like there, if you think about the stages of it, like, okay, God creates, and look, here's the thing. This is why identity is so important. You are a unique creation that he molded for a purpose. And it's not just this little, we have all these human ideas of purpose. His ideas are not the same as ours.
No, they are not.
And they're eternal. So you have this eternal divine purpose. You're unique for that. I mean, come on. That is monumentally different than what the world tells you. Not only that, he says, I'm adopting you. As you are now, for infinity, you are now considered my son or daughter.
Yeah. Well, and for me, to wrap this up even tighter, you know, the Bible, there are examples of trauma in the Bible.
Yes.
And benefit from trauma. Let's start back in Genesis. they eat from the fruit and they are expelled from the garden. They are expelled from paradise, right? Like that would be a traumatic event, right? And then pain and childbirth and all these things were heaped on them that were traumatic. And then you look at Abraham and the trauma of being asked to sacrifice his only son with no explanation on faith alone, right? You look at all that David went through. You look at all that Samson went through. You look at all that. Those were traumatic events, right? But what the Bible is it's a great example of that trauma's not the end, right? Trauma can happen and everything can still be okay.
Well, let's even look at Jesus's lineage, okay? Goes all the way back, you know, to David through prostitutes.
Yeah.
Dude. I mean, look. Jesus is proof that your lineage can be changed. Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be that way. And I guess I would just encourage everybody to like, you know, look, that three times unwilling to speak out
mm-hmm.
also applies to how we're probably three times less likely to want to engage in a close relationship with those we don't know that well.
Yeah.
We're so fearful. We're so wrapped up in all this nonsense. I mean, you know, I mean, if I had my way and I'm, you know, I would have a multi-generational household here. And I did, I had my father living with me while he was here, but, and that was that dude, I'll tell everybody this, that was so hard, but I loved it. Like my whole family loved it. Having My dad here.
Nothing worth doing is easy, brother.
No, it's not. It was hard. But, dude, I am so thankful for the time that I had him in my, that he got to live here.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And, you know, I'd have, so I told Julius, you know, I'd have my, you know, my daughters, like, you know, they can want to have their families and live with us and everything. I don't care. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I guess that's where I'm at. Like, I don't need, when I became a dad, that totally wrecked my idea about space and responsibility and duty. And it's so changed to where I cherish those things. And, you know, it's like, I think today in modern culture, we get wrapped up in our careers and all this stuff, but I don't regret putting off job offers, location moves to a much, much higher paying thing and doing all this. I don't regret any of that, man. I mean, that's what I just, because the family that I've been able to have trumps any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's where we got to stick with and, you know, it applies to your immediate family, your extended family, and your church family.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, stop being afraid. Start putting people at your dinner table.
Well, and one of the great things, dude, is like the examples of people who you didn't expect to be familial contacts in your life. Like my wife's got some cousins, her cousin Deanne and her husband Graham, they've been fantastic friends, you know, to me and my wife, and very gracious and allowed me plenty of opportunities. Shout out to you guys. You're awesome. And I've also got, you know, people that we didn't know we impacted that deeply, right? Like she has another cousin who's getting married in April and reached out to us and was like, I would be so honored if you guys would come to our wedding. I think so high. And I never knew that but my wife and I have always tried to be a united front, right? So, and I think that example, and I know that you and Julie, your wife, your Julie, there's this, you guys are always together. Like it's always there's never that conflict that's visible, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that idea, but he did it anyway, right? It's that exists, right? So, you know what I would tell people too is prepare for the fact that your family will disappoint you.
And you will disappoint them.
And you will disappoint them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but if they're family, like true family, then there will be forgiveness. Right. Now is that to say that if you've had a family member who's done you wrong in ways that have affected you, whatever, emotionally, financially, spiritually, that you've not had to let that person go? No, sometimes that happens, but everything happens for a reason. Hang on to that, because you're going to learn something from it, right? You're going to learn something from it. And it's going to make you stronger for that family that you're building.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, keep in mind, God's idea of family is harmonious.
Yeah.
Deuteronomy 6:6-9. Right. And I mean, this is why the Bible even talks about picking your spouse. You all need to be lockstep into the same mindset, because it's meant to be harmonious. You're not going to have that if you both disagree about major spiritual things, dude. It's just, this is why all this is important when it comes to when you start to create your own family. Man, it is critical for you to be hypercritical of who you're chasing after.
Yeah.
And it's not, this is why I encourage young people to like get rid of the dating mindset and work towards almost that courting for marriage mindset, because it's really like, it is so critical for this soul joining relationship to be rooted in like harmonious nature, I guess I'll say, right? Mm-hmm. Like you really need to work towards knowing each other at a soul level, that you are compatible, that you're not going to be exactly, that's not what I mean, but like you really need to be able to be lock and step and harmonious in your relationship. And that shouldn't take a lot of effort, because you're going to have so much effort put into all kinds of things. You don't need that to be the problem.
And that's not to say that you're not going to disagree.
Exactly.
But you have to be able to work that out in a civil manner, right? Like those are the kind of tenets of just everyday living, right? Like we both have personalities. We're not always going to agree, but there's always the ability to sit down and talk it out.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to admit when you're wrong. I mean, I've been wrong, and I've been like, ooh, yeah, that was a bad call, right?
It's tough though, dude. I mean, like, you know, there are very purposeful instructions and definitions of roles and responsibilities for family that God gives us.
Yeah.
And they're there for a reason. This is why we talk about so much about being a godly man, about being a godly father, is because those things are critical for a family unit,
yeah,
to survive.
Sure. Absolutely.
Not even just in your own immediate, but also in the community that you're in too.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, so like, I would encourage young people, man, don't disregard the words of the older generations, mm-hmm. especially the older, you know, great grandfathers, your grandfather kind of stuff. Man, I wish I could have had more conversations with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. I do. I tried to have as many of them as I could.
Yeah.
Because there's a wealth of experience that is wisdom that you need when you're younger.
Yeah.
Regardless of how smart, because everybody when they're young thinks they're indestructible, invisible, and all that stuff. But that's not true. But the biblical idea of family is rooted in the godly reality of how he created humanity.
Starting from the very beginning.
From the very, very, very beginning.
There was Adam, then there was Eve.
I mean, you know, and you can build off of that family into other units. And I would say here, though, that I want to bring back the idea that it's okay for you to not, to have a point in your life when you need to fix and mold your immediate thing, whatever that is. Like if you're having a problem, your family's having a problem, fix that. That's your priority. Okay. It doesn't matter what Joe Smith over here or some random person needs your help or whatever, but if you got to take care of your own household first. You got to take care of you and your household, period. Make sure that that's on the right track, because you don't have anything left at that point to go look somewhere else to give whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of times when we're, I know I've been tempted, whether it's financially, emotionally, or whatever, for this other group or person or whatever that really needed help. But yet I knew I had issues that I had to deal with of my own. You got to take care of those first. If you don't, it'll compound and it won't
be what you want it to be.
No, it'll end up bad.
Yeah, it'll crash.
And I will say a biblical example of what happens when you screw up the family ideal is King Solomon. What happened to that dude? Solomon. I mean, he had like, what was it? 1,000 wives or something stupid and like all these concubines and all this nonsense. And what happened at the end? He strayed so far away. He wasn't he was miserable.
Miserable too, bro.
I know. I mean, it was his choices to stray away from the God's ideals. Right. Yeah. And this is the wisest man that ever was supposed to ever live, you know? So I think we really got to internalize that and go, well, you're not going to be as wise as Solomon, and he really screwed the pooch. So,
yeah,
man, we better be guarded a little bit with where we're at, right?
What is it I heard? Information is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing that you don't put it in a fruit salad.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Well, I think we said that in one of our episodes, didn't we?
I don't know. Maybe we did. I thought I might have heard that. I don't know.
But I think we got to understand that the biblical idea is very countercultural that we have today from the secular ideals and the mainstream media, because the idea of the father is an exalted position. That is how God designed it to be.
For sure.
And that is so patriarchal, blah blah blah. I don't care. That's really the way it should be. And that's, I think it's absurd. Well,
I think, you know, the word patriarchy has been really kind of damaged. You know, I mean, what is the word patriarchy? I mean, let's take a look at that. Patriarchy.
Well, just for while you're doing that. So the going back to the Bible dictionary, the father mm-hmm. was responsible for the spiritual well-being of the family, as well as the individual members of the family. Responsibility was to see that no one took advantage of any member of his family. And those who were not protected by a father were truly disadvantaged persons.
Yeah.
Economically, the father was to provide for the needs of the various members of the family. So, I mean, there's very clear things that that is meant for the father, the exalted father position, right? In the role of the family.
Oxford Dictionary of the word patriarchy, a system of society or government in which the father or eldest male is head of the family and the descent is traced through the male bloodline. Okay. I think that's a pretty simple definition, right? Why is it? But I think that's part of, you know, we'll do a whole episode on words, actual meaning of words versus perceived meaning of words. But that's a whole nother episode.
So. Yeah. But anyway, so I would just reiterate, family is such a rooted heavenly concept that was created from the very beginning of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we stray from that rooted godlike definition and organization of a family, the more you're going to have issues and problems, and it's just not going to lead down the right path. So where I stand with it is, yeah, it's a patriarchy. Don't care. And if we do that right as men, and this is where men have to step up, we make the difference. We make that generational change. It doesn't mean we don't have our spouses who are influential and who are strategically important in any of that stuff, but it is the men who really make those generational differences matter and stick. The statistics tell that all day about the importance of the father and the family. So this is women get this, and I see this on like the little Instagram feeds and stuff. Got these little you know, feministic rants and all this crap, but they don't understand the real, like, if when a man takes that stuff seriously, how much pressure that actually is.
Yeah. It's an immense amount of pressure. It's just an immense amount of responsibility, you know, and there are men out there that don't need to take it and shouldn't take it. Right. But I don't think that, and I think here's what I would say. Women look at patriarchy as what they're trying to dominate me. What they don't realize is the word patriarchy doesn't carry any weight for them. It carries weight for the man who's the head of the house. If I'm in a patriarchy and I'm responsible for everything that happens in my home, dude, that's a big, big, big load to carry.
It is.
Right. And in that, there is a very mixed up view of what that word means. A very backwards view of what that word means. And let me be clear. The guy that gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning and goes to work and rides on the back of a trash truck, dumps trash into a dumpster so that he can come home for his 45 grand a year and pay the bills and put a roof over your head, is not trying to dominate you. He's trying to be a good man, right? The guy that gets up at, you know, 4 a.m. and goes to work whatever job he's going to work, do you honestly think that that guy is overseeing some kind of invisible kingdom that you don't know about? No, he's trying to be a good man. He's trying to be a good husband and a good provider. He's trying to take that word patriarchy very seriously.
Yeah.
So maybe step back away from the perceived definition of what you're thinking and actually look at what happens when a male takes that role as the head of his family. I take that role very seriously. I want to provide for my family, and I want to take that fear of, you know, not having security away. That's a huge responsibility for me, and I take that on willingly, right?
I mean, look, it's not like we live in this completely like easygoing world that is completely safe and there's no worries. It's not it at all. I mean, you know, I'm constantly thinking about watching out here and there. And it's like, you know, I'm always on guard. I mean,
are we making smart, safe choices?
Here's a good example. We had that daddy daughter dance for the American Heritage Girls thing. My girls were, and I've been coined the pit bull because I
can so see it.
I know, because, you know, the girls would dance every once in a while, but mainly they were just playing. They wanted to go play or whatever, but what was I doing? I'm like patrolling, dude. I mean, I am, because it's a crowded group of thing. It's loud, you know, it's dark. So yeah, I'm like on defensive mode, dude. I'm like on patrol.
Yeah.
And I make sure I could see my kids at all times. I made sure of this. And American Heritage Girls, dude, is a great organization. And it's not like I felt they were in danger, but like, I just take it that, I mean, like, I am not going to be that guy who like, oh, they'll be fine. And then all of a sudden it's not fine, because it's not the world we live in.
Well, I've been out with my wife before and she'll be talking to me and I'm listening to her, but I'm looking over here. I'm watching over here. She'll be like, are you paying attention? And I'll be like, okay. But what she doesn't realize that I'm doing is I'm becoming very vigilantly aware of who's in my purview. Not that I'm like paranoid, but if something goes down, I need to know what's around me.
Well, yeah.
Right. I need to know where my pluses and my minuses are. And I need to know if the guy at the next table is going to.
What is that called? Operational awareness.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to make sure that I know where we are. I know who's behind me.
I don't have any military training. Okay. I've had some other stuff, but I've never been in the military, whatever. I don't proclaim to be some, you know, fighter guy, ultimate dude, whatever. But I've read a lot. I know a lot of things, and I know that in order for me to be able to even respond to something, I got to do the best I can. Right. So it's like in any situation, the safety of my family is of my top concern. It's
paramount.
It is
amongst everything else.
I don't care if I'm uncomfortable. I don't care if I make you uncomfortable. That is where my mind is at.
I just want you to know, Reggie, you've never made me uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's you, Brian, and you know me.
I know.
You know I'm going to be. It was just funny. My wife loved it when she said she came home. We were the next thing or whatever. It goes, and the ladies were like, oh, that was your husband, the pit bull walking around the. Yep, that was
ladies him. And gentlemen, the pit bull.
I mean, look, I'm sorry. Just that's just how I'm just, it's not that I'm fearful. It's not that I worried. It's just, but I just take it seriously, man. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, if something happens, it's not going to be on my watch.
Yeah. Or if something happens, I'm going to be as prepared as I can be to deal with it.
I mean, but that's what a real man has to do. That's a man who takes it seriously, and that's what kind of pressure that they assume. So I don't care. I don't care what people think. I don't care if they would have called me a baboon. Don't really care. I mean, it's like whatever. But I do it tomorrow again.
Yeah, I would go more than a pit bull. I would say more of King Kong.
I don't know, but it was hilarious, and I loved it. And I was like, yep. Thankfully, they noticed because now they know that I'm going to do that.
Well,
but yeah.
Anyway.
There's a hats off to Paul's Pipes who made me this beautiful flame glass chambered pipe. It's amazing. It looks,
I don't know if the camera does it justice.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But when Reggie showed it to me, I was like a hand-carved, flaming,
yeah,
visible tubed masterpiece.
It's just freaking, it's so cool.
It looks like it. Hand-carved. Somebody took their hand. And carved.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. I can't. It's one of my. It's probably. It is my favorite pipe acquisition I've ever had. But it
which was, is saying a lot because Reggie has a lot of pipes. He has. People are waiting to get pipes because Reggie has them all. Tobacco too. He has like a hidden stash. It's like if the apocalypse ever goes down, let's say the zombie apocalypse breaks out. If you need a pipe, you're going to have to find Reggie because he has them all. So just be prepared.
The thing is, I am not unusual for the pipe hobby. It's just.
Dude, I don't have any hobbies.
I know you got. Yeah, it is weird. And I think that's important, brother.
You don't have any hobbies.
Well, you do have one. I have two watches that need to be fixed. So you can take.
That's not a hobby, bro. That was a career. But if you'd like me to put batteries in your watches, I will. But I take that back. I love to collect tennis shoes.
I know you do. You've mentioned that before. Tennis shoes are cool.
I'm a tennis shoe junkie.
But you don't have you don't do the whole you know, '90s era Jordans.
Yeah, I'm
and
not
stuff,
stupid. I'm not know? Paying $5,000 for a pair of tennis shoes.
I know, but
I'm not gonna not get.
Who was that one? There was one famous person who had a whole who just collected Air Jordans.
Oh yeah,
and I had a room full of them. I forget who it was.
But for me, there's nothing more awesome than getting a brand new pair of kicks and just walking around sporting the kicks, right? Just all the kicks.
They're expensive, dude.
Nah, dude, I buy shoes on clearance. These right here, these New Balance Trails, they're regularly $100. We got them for $44.95. I was like, no, I don't pay. Now take that back. If I think it's cool enough, if it meets the cool standard, I'll pay full price. But that means $8,500. I'm not gonna go out there and spend there's people that are out there right now paying $300-$400 for a pair of tennis shoes. You need to quit smoking crack,
dude. I was looking for. I like the barefoot
yeah.
shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I used to buy. I used to really wear them when I play drums.
Mm-hmm.
They are the, for me, they're the most best thing to wear playing drums. And it took me a while to find something I really liked. I had those Vibram five fingers with the like toe, but they look so goofy on me. I'm like, it just looks so terrible. Yeah,
but they were purposeful, right?
They were, and they I only wore purpose. Them to play.
Yeah,
but it was still like, it just made me feel uncomfortable because they look so weird. So I finally found like the they had some Vibram ones that were full, and I got those and I wore those out, and then finally found some on Amazon. But anyway, I guess I love those. What especially when playing drums, it was like well, I'll tell you where it really paid off is when I used to do all the death metal or progressive metal type of stuff, which was like a lot of feet work. Man, it was so much better with the barefoot shoes. When I play like the country gigs, though, I could go in my cowboy boots, and it really doesn't really matter because I
don't hear a lot of like bombastic drum solos in country music.
No, but like when you're playing songs that are like 15 minutes long they go through all these double bass patterns and all this kind of stuff, then yeah, it's kind of.
Well, you know? Here's the one that tripped me out. I was watching a video of a guy who's a drummer. I think he's the drummer he was the drummer for White Zombie, but he's in a drummer and he's a different band now. Dude, he was working a double bass in flip-flops. Flip-flops. I'm not talking like high-end flip-flops. I'm talking about I got these at the Dollar General store, plastic between the toe, pads only that thick, flip-flops, wearing those bass drums out.
Well, dude, one of the newer, younger guys that I really, really like named Chris Turner. He's from the UK, and he plays in a band called Oceans 8 Alaska. But he actually did a crowdfunded solo album, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a real, real adamant about no quantizing, no sound replacement. No, I mean, like he's really anal. He's just super anal about this stuff, right? He plays some of the fastest, most complicated crap though, and like just nails it. And he wears socks, you know. So you'll see he'll put these videos up. Like the crowdfunded thing was cool because he would record the session that he actually, because the album, he specifically said he would tell you what take it was, and it was all one take of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And he would record it, video and everything. And so you got to, when you were during the crowdfunding thing, you got to actually see the video of him, the take that they kept of him playing it. And it was like, you know, they had a close up of the kick drum and then, you know, everything. And it was so impressive how and accurate and everything this dude was
in sock feet
and it's wearing socks. A lot of drummers do barefoot too, but
I could understand barefoot.
Yeah,
but socks feel like they would slip off the pedal.
That's what I would think too. But I mean, if you see this dude, you'd be like,
or is he wearing like the grippy socks?
I don't know. Might be grippy.
Might be the grippy socks.
I don't know. But one more thing.
Okay.
Did you pay attention to any of the TikTok nonsense going on?
No, because I hate that app.
I do too. I've never done it. I've never used it. But apparently, like, there's a whole thing about wanting to shut it down or not have access to it or whatever because of all the security.
Chinese spyware.
Yeah, all that nonsense, right?
It is literally polluted.
I don't know what's on there, man. I mean, I just know that I don't really care. And I don't really, I've never said, oh, I need to go to TikTok.
Well, it'd be different if we did it like they actually did it in China. In China, you can watch TikTok, but there's the only thing allowed on it is like they want excellence on there.
Yeah.
Like it's all positive. Our TikTok is just nauseous garbage. But no, I haven't paid any attention.
Yeah, man. Somebody was talking about how it was really, there's the most of it is propaganda stuff and kind of nonsense like that. I don't know. Cause like I said, you know, and my girls don't have access to any kind of that stuff and I don't even pay that much. Hell, I don't even like getting on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
That much. But anyway, I thought I'd ask you about all that. And I mean, so the question was like, I think it was, I don't remember which content creator or personality it was, but they're like, well, you know, do you think TikTok should be, you know, removed or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, why was it? I just didn't understand. To me, I just didn't understand why that was such a big deal. Like, yeah, just if it's got all these security concerns and the Chinese government's pulling in all this crap, then why
wouldn't we shut it off?
Well, yeah, it's like that Temu site, though, too. People don't understand that. It's a Chinese-backed thing meant to further destabilize pricing and stuff because of what it is. It's on purpose. And it's a Chinese
cheap garbage. It's cheap knockoff garbage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, we wish same thing. Like it was like, why it's all this garbage it's owned by the Chinese, you know, and, mm-hmm. but it's, I don't know. So be an informed consumer, I guess is really what I'm saying. But
yes. Mm-hmm. And all the same crap you see on Wish and on Temu or Temu,
whatever that is,
it's on Amazon.
Well, Julie was like, she ordered something. I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. Well, it was this and this. I'm like, hell, you probably won't even ever see it. I mean, come on. It was just like, no. So I told her, I said, it's backed by the China. You can't do that stuff. Get off, cancel everything. We don't need that in our, no.
Yeah. No one needs
that. Yeah. So I was just to educate people who don't know Temu, Wish, TikTok, those type of things.
TikTok has a store now too.
Well, it's owned by the Chinese. I mean, look, it's not okay. They blatantly are using that information.
They're blatant. Well, but they're also blatantly trying to destabilize our economy to justify the low cost and the low wages that they pay to the people in their country. It's their way of trying to okay. Oh, well, you'll be okay if I pay this kid 50 cents a week because he makes drones that might explode because they were wired together by a half asleep Chinese at 12 year old. I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Well, all right, Brian, I guess I'll just say like, subscribe, comment.
Yes, please. We would really like your subscriptions because we really would like to get more content out there for people to hear. So hit that subscribe
share it,
send the link. Or as a friend of mine says, who's not really computer savvy, could you send me the links? Well, it's actually just one link.
Just one link. Yeah.
But yeah, guys, here's another episode. Hope you like it.
We're R&B Talks.
See ya
later.